Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Kvosvik.
Hey, James. Have you ever designed something that it didn't quite work right?
Maybe. Probably more than once or twice.
I don't know. Does Canada have like a Fifth Amendment type clause where you don't have to self-incriminate, or is that? Because here I'd say you could plead the Fifth, but I don't think that applies. I don't know if it's the same phrase in Canada.
We use the same phrase, but I don't know if it is actually covered in, you know, legislature or something like that. But yeah, there has been times I've designed things and it has not worked well or according to plan.
Okay. Yeah, design's not easy, right? I remember years and years ago, I was a manufacturing engineer, and we were making circuit boards essentially for inkjet printers. And Ed was the electrical engineer that was making the particular design for the boards that I was supporting through manufacturing process. And I'd been on the job for a couple months, and he was my primary contact. And I'd show up and he would just get this slump shoulders and sigh and kind of, oh, he's here again. and it's like, you know, what do you mean? And he goes, well, every time you show up, you're telling me something I can't do. Right. There's keep outs and clearances and constraints on the equipment. And, you know, can't do this, can't do that. I got to move that. I got to keep that out. All these. And then you come in and tell me that this new fangled solder joint's not tested, so we can't use that. It fails and we can't do that. Why didn't you help me solve problems? Okay. Let me think about that. And he was right. All yep. of my work up to that point was every time, you know, and I'm thinking of in a maintenance world, if every time the maintenance engineer walks into the design teams looking at the next piece of equipment, next layout of the line or the next, you know, factory setup and says, well, here's all the keep outs, here's all the safety, here's all the environmental considerations, here's all the stuff we need so that we can do our job, and you can't design it that way. You can't do that, can't do that, can't do that. That's not terribly helpful, is it?
No, it gets kind of frustrating for the design engineers, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. But it's also an incredibly complex process to design something, to get it right. And, you know, the maintainability of a piece of equipment is important. But so is cost. So is throughput. You know, its features and functions, and so is the environment, and so is serviceability, and so is, you know.
Yep. All that stuff needs to be very considered well in advance, concepted, thought out before we even get to design.
That's right. The hard part, though, I find is that, you know, a mechanical engineer or this electrical engineer, he had lots of experience, he created lots and lots of designs, and we had the fortunate ability to build prototypes right in-house, right downstairs. And so it wasn't send it off to China. It wasn't, you know, get your specifications and then Siemens or Bosch would make the equipment for you and send it over on a truck. And all of those kinds of, we had the advantage that everything was in-house. And so if something seriously was wrong, I could just say, come with me, let's go look at this and figure it out. Right.
Yep.
When you're representing a remote system, right? Or like one team I work with, is their design teams were in the headquarters building in another city, and most of their work was specifying stuff to vendors to build the custom equipment for them. So it was twice removed.
Yep.
You know?
And you don't always get what you want when that happens, right?
No. And especially if you're sitting on the floor saying, you know, if they would have gave me another inch clearance on this hatch, I would be able to do this three times faster. It's in the details, right? It's little things sometimes that make the world a difference.
Absolutely. From both a reliability and maintainability standpoint, you know, there's you strike the balance between reliability and maintainability. But all those little things need to be considered, right? Yeah. What do we want this asset to do for us or system to do for us? You know, am I trying to produce 1 million widgets a year? Okay, well, if then we have to consider what is the inherent reliability to that design and work backwards. Okay, mm-hmm. Our inherent reliability might be 95%. So now we got to build in an extra 5% capacity on that line. And that's if it was just strictly from a design perspective. Mm-hmm. Then you need to consider losses from construction, installation, operation and maintenance, all these other losses. So we have to build in all that extra capacity from a reliability standpoint. On top of that, then we got to consider, okay, when this stuff fails, we have to maintain it. How are we going to maintain that? Who's going to maintain it?
Yeah. What kind of diagnostics do you have? What kind of unique tools and equipment do you have? Unique training? All of those things stack up to add a lot of cost if you don't make it consistent with the crew you got already.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have to understand what are the requirements, but then work backwards from there and figure out, you know, using reliability allocation or maintainability allocation. So we, you know, come down from failure rates to different subsystems and calculate required reliability or maintainability for those systems. So when it all rolls up, the system's going to do what we want it to do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work in that. And there's a lot of other considerations that, you know, might not be so quantitative, if you will, for example, right? You know, that was reliability or maintainability specifications. You know, that's one part. But the non-quantitative stuff is I want to use my existing crew. Yeah. I don't want to have to hire a bunch of experts.
Right. Right.
You know,
or what kind of diagnostics are we having? And that's a, you know, often a cost trade-off also. It's, do I add a bunch of stuff, sensors and diagnostics and artificial intelligence to this? Or do I have a crew that's trained well enough that knows they can deal with it? They understand this system and they don't need the extra pieces to it. Or is it the machine so complex that we have to add that? Otherwise we're lost. Have you looked under a car hood lately? Good grief.
Yeah, I'm not doing that no more.
No, me either. But you're right. So how do you get the input? Have you seen a good model for getting the input from the design team to the design team at early enough in the program that they can implement the advice from the maintenance crew?
I think there's multiple different approaches that I've seen varying levels of success with. Now, you know, part of the problem I find in a lot of manufacturing is these systems, these assets we're buying, you know, they're not a massive fleet of them going out, right? Mm-hmm. So this, we're going to buy one or two of these and they're not going to build another one or two of these at all, or probably for the next 10, 20 years or whatever the case is.
Right.
So organizations are a little bit hesitant to put a lot of design effort into those types of systems. Now, if we're building a fighter jet, for example, we're going to produce hundreds of these things, or, you know, even more. We're going to put effort into it because there's a fleet of them, right? It's going to help reduce that overall cost. But right. For onesie, twosie pieces of equipment, I don't see that being done. But the approaches I have seen done well is, you know, once we got a concept of what this thing is going to do, get some experienced maintenance people in. And the best example I have is I was with an organization who had a concept done, but it was modeled in 3D. Mm-hmm. So we could sit there, look at and interact with the model to figure out, how are we going to access that pump? Oh, you're going to have to put a lifting point here, or you have to give us more access here, right?
Right.
So we could do that. And that was, you know, it was labor intensive. It was, you know, 5, 6, 7 maintenance people in a room with the design company for, you know, 5 or 6 days going through the entire asset like that.
Right, right.
But we were able to identify a lot of different things that from before it was even drawn up in detail of what needed to be fixed or addressed.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. That's the way to do it. Yeah, it's a facilitated design review is one way to think of it, especially with the 3D CAD drawings and having it to scale is brilliant. And it's amazing when you get the right people in the room, they can look at it and go, you know, that will work or that won't work. Or have you thought of, you probably came out with a list of action items for the design team, but also things to would be a good to have list, right? Things to watch as you start detailing out the design. If you can give me some more room here, that'd be great. You know, it'd save it. You don't have to do the detailed cost benefit analysis in every one of those things because it's still concept phase, right?
Exactly. So, you know, that aspect, that one technique worked quite well. There's been others where I see they have like a very simple designed for maintainability, a design for reliability checklist, which are, these are how we want to maintain this thing. And it might say, you know, all access panels cannot have more than 3 bolts per side or something like mm-hmm. that, for example.
Right.
You know, lots of various stuff like that, that it sounds simple, but if we do those little things, it saves a lot of time long-term for maintaining or repairing an asset when it goes down.
Yeah. Well, it's like a design guideline almost. It's where, or I can envision that as being a set of guidelines or a design for maintainability.
Exactly.
Expand it out. And here's the rationale. And here's the part numbers we already have. Here's the tools we have. Here's our constraints. If you go outside of that, you know, we got to talk about it. Yep, what's the cost benefit? But it eliminates a lot of the guessing that's done by the design team.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that guideline, if you will, it requires some effort to pull it together. Yep. But then once you hand that off to the design team, they have something to work with. You know, yep. Now you can get into a variety of other types where, you know, we're doing functional analysis, understand what would stop each one of these functions. What can we do to mitigate that from a corrective or preventative standpoint, analyzing those and then working up or working back from the very bottom of, here's the tools, the parts, the people we need for each one of these issues. These ones are not acceptable in terms of repair time. So mm-hmm. these are the ones we have to address. You can get into that level of detail, but that's a lot of analysis.
It is.
That's required.
But that's, you know, as you're getting closer to finalizing the design, and that total list is probably in the order of 50 items you got to think through very carefully. Whereas in the concept phase, you can go through hundreds and hundreds of ideas and get them incorporated for not a lot of investment in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we have equipment that we're replacing that, you know, maybe it's a newer model or it's the same type of equipment we're replacing it with, you know, simply running a report on the breakdowns that you experienced, Pareto them, see mm-hmm. which ones give you the hardest time and bring that to that concept or include that in your design specification. These are the ones that plague us. How are we going to eliminate these? Even just being able to communicate those types of things to the design team, I think, is helpful because then they're aware of these are the things that drive downtime. These are the things that cause issues. Mm-hmm. How do we address some of these in a concept phase?
Well, exactly. And I saw it was using an FMEA as a way to bring these various teams together. So they had technicians, operators, repair folks, a couple of first-level managers. It was probably 15 people, which is a bigger crowd than you would normally want for an FMEA, but they had a really excellent facilitator. They also had people from the equipment vendor's house. These guys were bringing in equipment for like a bottling plant, for example. And the objective was, well, how can we design a line and the equipment associated with it so we can do changeovers more quickly? What they had found is that it'd take them 3, 4, or 5 days before the machines were running closer to the desired capacity. And it was too much of a penalty to do a changeover. The hit to capacity was too high. So they would do long runs and had a huge warehouse as a consequence of it. And they were trying to reduce their warehouse overhead, which would have, it was amazing. The scale of these things, it was, if they cut their warehouse inventory down, even by half, it was worth investing tens of millions of dollars to design a line that would allow that. And if they found after 3 days of going through this is that the operators and the repair teams, the maintenance teams gave them enough suggestions and enough ideas to go, if you did this, and it wasn't going to be a huge major redesign of any of the equipment. It was, I don't know what the right term is, James, is where it's a quick changeover and you put it in and it's SMET. Already.
Yeah.
SMET. They inherently knew what that was and were saying, just do this, you know, and simple things. It's where I wish we should have talked a couple of years ago about this because these guys really did need that. Just capture, here's the guidelines. If you do this, our life would be a lot easier. Your equipment would run better because they knew it. Right. And so a lot of that got incorporated in it. The vendors were happy because it was what they thought of as relatively easy. they don't need to make a piece of equipment that could handle every possible bottle size. They needed to be a piece of equipment that handled three bottle sizes, and that's it. You know, so instead of a sliding adjustment for the rails, it was three stops. That was it. And so they learned a lot very, very quickly.
Yeah. And it's just pulling that information out of the mechanics, the operators. They all know inherently what the issues are. They might not know the technical term like SMED or center lining or all these other things, but they know what plagues them. So even just having that simple conversation and that basic review with like a 3D model or some sort of an FMEA, even if it's a simplified FMEA I've seen used.
Yep.
Let's get that information out. Let's get that to the design team. We're not going to tell the design team how to solve that problem at that point. Right. We're going to let them come up with the solutions. But here are the problems that are plaguing us.
Yep. Yep. And then I think to summarize it, though, is that the step that we can do as reliability engineers in these facilities is get that information and gather it, facilitate building that guideline so that you have it ready as a first level checklist, and then procedures like FMEAs and reviews, design concept reviews, have that in place so that as you get wind of a new design coming down, you can catch it at the concept phase. That's the key piece of it. You can start now though.
Yeah. And ideally what you do is you build it into, you become friends with the engineering manager or capital manager or whatever their name is, and you build it into their process.
Yep.
So it's not relying on us catching it. It's part of their process to engage us, right?
Well, that's, I think, the tipping point, right? You know your program's successful is when you have influence on the design and they ask you to come. And it's not a hard business case at all to make, right? Most people inherently get it. But remember that this design team has got cost and function and environment and a dozen other design for criteria. And so make it easy for them. Make it clear that it's a value and they'll pull you in to go do it. Yeah.
And then, you know, you're not going to get everything you ask for.
Well, ask for a lot of stuff. It's kind of my strategy.
Yeah, ask for a lot, get 50%, we're doing all right.
Your mileage may vary on that.
We're not going to get everything. We don't expect to get everything, but let's identify what are the issues, what are the benefits. And, you know, sometimes you might have to get down to that cost benefit analysis for certain things. Other things, like you said, it's going to be very intuitive. We're not going to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So let's make sure that if they have the information, they also have what is this going to help us long term. So if they got to get to that level, they can do the cost benefit analysis and make an informed decision.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the gist of it. And it's a lot of what I talk about with design teams is you got to make an informed decision. And so a big chunk of our role in all of these different fields is making that information available at the right time. And so that's the key piece to it. Well, you know, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, my design team never wants to talk to us, or, you know, all those other aspects of it, you know, what are those barriers? What are you seeing? And it might make a nice future podcast for James and I is, you know, what are those barriers? What are you seeing as the pushback for you guys getting these design for maintainability items incorporated into your upcoming equipment? You know, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and let us know what your story is and what those issues are. And I'm sure that we could schedule it into a future episode or two. Besides that, we just love hearing from you and what you think of the show and all that good stuff. So both James and I are available through LinkedIn and through the site. We're pretty easy to find. So, and we thoroughly enjoy hearing from you. So we look forward to that. So James, now you're all inspired to go design something that you can repair, or are you going to stay out of the shop?
I'm staying out of the shop right now. I just don't want to introduce that.
Well, you probably have winterization in your head around your part of the world. It's, I think, fall colors and getting cold at night.
Yeah, that's already taken care of. And, you know, certain parts of the house, you know, the lawn sprinklers, they were not designed with maintainability in mind. It is a giant pain to drain those things.
Oh, yeah.
So,
there's your design opportunity. It's your
next house.
There you go. Next house. All right. All right. Cool. Thanks, James. We'll talk to you soon. All right.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.